The Splendid Table, the show for curious cooks and eaters, and I'm your host, Francis Lamb. You ever play one of those video games where you get to create your own character, right? And you're like, okay, I want 99 points for speed for sure, and 99 points for power, and 99 points for dexterity, and because you have no sense of fair play, all of a sudden you've created the Terminator to play wide receiver on your team. Magnus Nilsson is like one of those characters, but for food. He's one of the most respected chefs in the world, and somehow he's also managed to travel to every corner of every Nordic country and wrote not one but two books documenting recipes for like every single food in every single cuisine he found. And oh yeah, he photographed them all himself too, so hey, that's ridiculous. Anyway, his latest, The Nordic Baking Book, isn't just a cookbook for bakers. It's a dive into what the breads of a place say about the history and climate and economics of a place. Our friend Shauna Seaver talked with him about what he found out.
Hi, Magnus. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, when you first open this beautifully massive book, you're greeted with a map that shows you just how vast the geographical area is that we're talking about here. And it's much more inclusive than, say, a Scandinavian cookbook would be. Scandinavia is more of a cultural term, right? What's the difference between Scandinavian and Nordic?
Scandinavia is actually the three kingdoms, Norway, Denmark, and Sweden, and nothing else. Whilst the Nordic region is Scandinavia, plus Finland, Åland, the Faroe Islands, Iceland, and Greenland.
It's huge.
It is.
So I think that distinction is really important because that must have informed you how to approach the recipes. This book feels almost like a textbook. It's really factual, really well-researched. So you have this huge area that you're covering, so much history, and I imagine so many recipes. How do you even know where to begin?
I mean, so this book project has been spanning over about 6 years. And halfway through it, we produced the Nordic Cookbook. And now to finish it, we have done the Nordic Baking Book. And it's meant to be sort of a snapshot of what people actually eat and bake in their homes today, meaning that most of the research was actually done out in the field, meeting people, looking into their homes, reading their recipe books, and so on.
You have so many wonderful recipes in the book, and it's such a wide variety of things, and pastries and pancakes and cookies. But I think the breads really shine in this book. And bread seems to be a very important part of Nordic living, a really important part of the menu at Favikens, certainly. So can you give us some examples of the versatility of bread and how it's eaten in different parts of the region?
I think it has to do with the fact that most of the Nordic region is a marginal climate, and various dishes made from grains used to be a daily staple, and still is for most people, actually. And it used to be where most of your caloric intake came from. And because of this, there is also a huge variety in what kinds of bread we make. And I think that's really reflected in this book as well, even though, I mean, people today, they don't have to eat, the traditional bread of their region to survive anymore, but we still choose to do because we like them.
You set the stage for the book in a way that's really clever. The first section is called The Four Grains of the Nordic Region. And I thought this was a really interesting way to start the book. So what are those four grains and why are they the foundation of Nordic baking?
So, well, there are wheat, barley, oats, and rye. And what makes the Nordic region sort of culturally very interesting and diverse when it comes to the baking is that one of these grains has always been, you know, very important in every part of the region. And if you compare that, for example, with a more homogeneous climate, like, say, France, you know, all over France they grow wheat, meaning that wheat is also the predominant ingredient in most French breads and pastries. But wheat only grows in a small part of the Nordic region. And then you have another part, let's say Finland, for example, where rye is, you know, the predominant grain, or up north where I come from, where barley would be the grain of choice in historical times. And things like that really influences what people could bake in the past and what we choose to bake today.
Now let's talk a little bit more about rye, which I think of as being such a classic ingredient and flavor in Nordic baking. And you don't find it all over the place, but you do here. And when and where did rye start to take hold in the story of Nordic cuisine?
I mean, that's something that's actually not been proven, but it's one of the grains that have been there for, you know, since prehistoric times, essentially. You can look, though, today and see where it's been popular for the last, let's say, 300 or 400 years. It would be Finland, as I said before, and also Denmark to a large extent, and for different reasons. I mean, in Denmark, which has the greatest farming climate in all of the Nordics, people grew wheat on their best soils, and wheat was and still is a very, you know, highly prized trade commodity. So that was sold to continental Europe, and then they grew rye on their poorer soils, which they kept for themselves. And this really reflects in what breads you'll find, because in Denmark you'll have both pure wheat breads and you'll have pure rye breads, and you also have a mix of wheat and rye in some breads. Whilst in Finland, that can pretty much only grow rye and not so much wheat because of the climate, with very, very short and dry summers in the south and a bit too you know, much cold in the north for wheat, you'll have almost only pure rye breads.
Rye is lower in gluten than wheat, correct?
Yeah.
So how does this affect the types of breads that are baked, the shapes, the textures? Can you give us some specific examples?
I mean, I think that they get flatter the further north you get is actually really interesting. Because like the fluffy wheat loaf, traditionally, you would pretty much only have found in the south, where you incidentally also have the highest density in population, meaning that there was also bakeries there. And the further north or the more marginal the climate, the less wheat people would have access to. And so you would get flatter breads. And the further north you come, you reach a point where pretty much all of the breads were only various types of flat breads, you know, dried crisp flatbreads or soft flatbreads.
One more thing I wanted to ask you about, because in terms of bread baking, slow fermentation has become really popular and sourdoughs. Can you tell us about the relationship between regions that use a lot of rye in their baking and their use of these kinds of methods? There seems to be a connection there.
I mean, there is a connection. And first of all, one thing that we have to think about is that for you know, industrial yeast production, all fermentations were slow fermentations and sourdoughs. And I mean, in a historic perspective, the kind of recipes we have today with fast fermentations is fairly new, and they're very reliant on the industrial bit. And if you look at, you know, the repertoire of recipes you'll have in let's say the Nordic region, then where you'll find most quick fermentations will also be in those areas that I said before, where you had the most wheat. So most of those recipes would be from southern Sweden, Denmark, maybe a little bit in southern Norway and southern Finland. Simply because, I mean, if you'd baked for generations and generations and you've done your slow ferments, and all of a sudden someone introduces the yeast, and instead of 3 days, it takes 45 minutes to leaven the loaf. And instead of, like, you know, like a bit fluffy, it gets really fluffy. With wheat, those things are... you know, you can easily see why that was very appealing and therefore also popular. And then you can go to Finland, where almost all of the baking is based on rye. Rye has a different sort of a composition of the starch content than wheat, and it ferments in a different way. And it doesn't really fluff up because it doesn't produce as much gluten. And if you do a quick fermentation of rye, it just doesn't taste particularly good either. You know, it really needs that slow fermentation to break down some of the complex carbohydrates and produce a bit of acidity and so on. So for them, the result was just much less immediately appealing. And, you know, in relationship to that, if you also take in consideration that industrial yeast needs to have industries to produce it, if the population is not particularly motivated to use your yeast, you're not going to start a factory there either, right?
Right. So
I think that, and that really shows even today, because, I mean, Finland has many, many more of the slow fermentations than we have in central Scandinavia.
Well, this is just amazing. Thank you so much for talking about it and creating a book that really is just a peek at a part of the world we really don't get to see often enough. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Magnus Nilsson is the author of the Nordic Baking Book, and he gave us a bunch of his bread recipes, including a really cool one from Sweden for twist bread that you bake on sticks. You'll totally need it for your next campfire. They're all at splendidtable.org.